morning with you.
Hi, I'm Jim Ehler, and I'm delighted to be with y'all today. I just might as well tell you right up front that I am a fan of Kerry O'Neill, so if you got any complaints about him, don't tell me. I'll just punch you in. No, I'm just don't tell me. So I want to tell you what I'm going to do, because that's what you're supposed to do. This message is about joy. Okay, so, and I'm going to tell you why it's an imperative that you be filled with joy. Oh, you want a mic? I was kind of enjoying yelling at you. Thank you. Let's see if that works. Does that help a little bit? Okay. So I'm going to tell you about joy today. This is what the message is about. I'm going to tell you why it's imperative for you to have and to be filled with joy. I'm going to tell you about the source of joy. I'm actually going to give you some steps toward joy, to sort of move you in that direction. And then I'm going to dispel the greatest myth about joy and happiness that kind of seems to be pretty popular. But it's a myth. All right, so let me give you some pre-qualifiers, some disclaimers. First of all, the opinions and the views of the guest speaker are not necessarily those of the church. And that should help Kerry with some damage control afterwards. Also, I just want you to know that when it comes to preaching, I'm a kleptomaniac. So pay attention to the screen and all the sources that this stuff comes from, because I think there are two original thoughts in this message, but I can't guarantee that because, there's nothing new under the sun. So I probably stole it all right? Three, this is about joy. It's not about sadness. You know, every sermon I've ever heard about joy, all it does is talk about sadness. I don't know why they do that, but we're just going to talk about joy today and nothing else. Also, this is not a short sermon, so I wanted to let you know that up front. I'll try to make it a little bit entertaining, but we will finish by 2 o'clock, which is ice cream time. Ice cream time comes first. I understand that. Also, I will tell you that whenever I've talked about joy, sometimes, not every time, but sometimes it makes people angry. Sad people, some of them will get angry when you talk about joy. So I hope that's not you. Also, I want to say that joy without humor is mute. It's just mute. And so I'm going to be telling some jokes. I hope that's okay with you. And it's okay with me if you laugh at my jokes. Yeah, that's okay. So I want to talk to you about joy, because I've heard a lot of people talk about joy and they never put a smile on their face. So got that over with, right? So our scripture today is from Nehemiah chapter 8, verse 10. It goes like this: go and enjoy choice food and sweet drinks. And to just get this thing started, I started a diner this morning with pancakes and syrup and even fruit on top. So go and enjoy choice foods and sweet drinks and send some to those who have nothing prepared. This day is holy unto the Lord. Do not grieve, for the joy of the Lord is your strength. Now, God, you are the joy, the Lord of joy. So we want to receive your joy with open arms and open hearts. All right, I want to start with a story. Now, this story goes right up to the line. It doesn't cross the line, but it goes right up to the line. And I'm going to trust you. I don't know why I'm trusting you with this, because frankly, I don't know you. But the good thing is after this is over, I'm heading out of town, and I'm going to get out of here before you catch up with me. But this story goes right up the line, doesn't go over the line, and I'm going to trust you not to take it over the line, okay? Try not to do that. But this happened a long time ago, because it was like 40 years ago I met this guy, and he was still known for this thing that happened to him in college, and he'd been out of college a while. So I'm thinking this happened maybe the mid-1950s, something like that. But it was way back when people still dated. It was way back when people, when guys had to ask the girl out, not the other way around. It happened when you never said anything like bathroom, or you just acted like you had no bodily functions. It was back in that time frame. And this guy that I met, it had happened to him 20 years before that, yet he was still known for this one thing. So he's in college. He sees this girl on campus that gets his attention. And so he kind of, you know, I don't know what, but sort of gets closer to her. And he's spending all this time trying to get up his nerve to ask her out. Because, you know, rejection is the gift that keeps on giving. And so he wanted to avoid that. But anyway, he finally got up his nerve and he asked her out. But then comes the anxiety of the first date. And so he goes to his roommate and says, look, why don't you and your girlfriend go with us? We'll just make it a double date kind of thing. So the arrangements were made. And so the big night came. And the guys, they took the girls out to a nice dinner. Back then, the guys paid for the date. And so they took them to a nice, you know, I don't know why females got away from that. But they really insisted on getting away from that. Really stupid. But anyway, back then, guys had to pay for the meal. And so the guy, you know, they took them to a really nice place. And then they took them to the movies. But during the movie, he had to go to the bathroom. But he never said that back in that time. But then he had this great idea. I know, I'll take popcorn orders. So he asks, who wants popcorn? I'm going for popcorn. Who wants? And so he takes popcorn orders. He heads out to the lobby, gets the bathroom real fast, comes back, gets the popcorn, comes back into the theater. And with his back to the screen, he's making his way down the aisle that he's sitting on. And as he passes his roommate does this. You know what that is, don't you? That's the universal sign for your zipper's down. So he starts to panic, but then quickly he comes up with a plan. He passes out the popcorn, turns around and faces the screen, and keeps moving down the aisle toward his seat very slowly, waiting for the movie to get, you know, it has those dark spots, waits for it to get a little dark. Very quickly, he reaches down, zips up his zipper, and he goes, oh, made it through that. And everything was fine until he took two more steps toward his seat when the girl with the long blonde hair that was sitting in front of them went, oh, 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 oh. Well, things kind of escalated at this point. The big, huge guy, football player type guy that the long girl with the long blonde hair was with isn't understanding what's going on here. And so things start to escalate. And finally, the usher, this was back when they had ushers at movie theaters. The usher comes down, and what the usher does, he shines his flashlight on it, which was like a spotlight. And so then everybody in the theater knows what's going on. Well, they never could get the hair out of the zipper, so they had to go back to the lobby, and so they head to the lobby with this poor girl going like this, all the way down the aisle. All right, so now I know some of you are sitting here going, why in the world would he tell us that story? Well, I'll tell you why. Because you cannot convince me that when that happened, God didn't laugh. Try as you may, you can't do it. You know, the whole idea of God laughing, you know, three times in the book of Psalms, it says the one enthroned in heaven laughs. And yet most people can't imagine God laughing, that he's that joyful. But he is, and I think most people can't understand it because most adults are sad. They've just come to this sad place. In fact, I know a lot of church people that look like they were baptized in prune juice, you know? In fact, a lot of church people kind of have that older brother syndrome. You remember the story of the prodigal son and how the older brother refused to celebrate? That describes a whole lot of church people. I hope it's not you. But I want to tell you something that's very, listen to this, because this is important. God is the most joyful being in the universe. I used to think it was Richard Simmons. It's not. God is the most joyful. Now let me prove it to you. You know, in Galatians chapter 5, there's a list of these characteristics that people that hang out with God get. You know, when you hang out with people, you sort of catch their characteristics. For example, my wife has an aunt that lives in Ireland, and whenever she calls, well, I have an Irish accent for the next 3 days, you know, because you catch that with, and the people that hang out with God catch these things. And you know what they are. They're love, joy, peace, patience, kindness. How do you get those? You get those hanging out with God. And people, I mean, the first one's love. People that hang out with God, they become loving. In fact, somebody named Carrie or somebody told me that you're the most loving congregation he's ever seen, which means either you really are or he doesn't get out much. You know, but I'm really expecting to get a lot of love in here while I'm here today. And where was I? We're talking about the fruits of the Spirit. Well, what's number two on the list? It's joy. People that hang out with God catch joy because God is the most joyful being in the universe. You know, on the day of Pentecost, when the Holy Spirit came down and the flames of fire and all of that sort of stuff, you know, what did the people in the town think? They thought they were drunk. You know why? Because they were full of the Holy Spirit. And so they were giddy, just like they were drunk. Ephesians chapter 5 says, don't be drunk with wine, but be filled with the Spirit. In other words, if you want to get giddy, just be filled with the Holy Spirit. Because God is the most joyful being in the universe. He is the Lord of joy. I mean, obviously God is joyful. Otherwise, how could the joy of the Lord be your strength? God is joyful. In fact, the whole book of the Bible is about joy. It's about how to have joy. I don't remember if you're old. Some of you may be old enough to remember that movie, Pollyanna. In it, she said, there are over 200 glad passages in the Bible. Well, she's right. There's over 200 glad passages in the Bible. And those glad passages don't include all the festivals where God says, I want you to have celebrations. I want you to have this time to celebrate, this time to celebrate. Doesn't talk about that. Doesn't talk about those 200 passages don't include all the times that wine represented joy in the Bible. Of the 264 times joy is mentioned in the Bible, 200 of them, joy is representing, wine is representing joy. Did I say that right? Okay, well, if you understood that, then think about John 2. What did Jesus do in wine? Let me straighten up my teeth here. He made wine in chapter 2 of John. Remember that? Scholars say he made between 72 and 180 gallons of wine. Why that much? Because Jesus is the Lord of joy. Of those 200 glad passages, it also doesn't mention all the times that people are dancing for joy in the Bible. 20 times we find people dancing for joy. In my first church, now I was like 26 years old. I was a real young guy then. But there was a lady, it was an inner city church in Richmond. And so you were kind of pastor of the whole neighborhood, and though most of the neighborhood didn't come to the church, you were kind of the pastor of the whole neighborhood. But anyway, there was this lady in the neighborhood, Thelma. And I was 26, and I'm guessing she was like 160 years old, you know. But she really was a little old lady in tennis shoes kind of gal. But anyway, she didn't come to church much, but when she did, she acted like she was sneaking in. She would sneak in after the service was over, sit near the back, and before the service was over, she'd leave. And I didn't quite understand that, but one Sunday I caught her. We had baptism, and after the baptism, you know, I'm the pastor, so I did the dunking. But what pastors do when they do that is they, as soon as the baptism's over, they get dressed real fast and come out and try to get to the church before the end of the first hymn, because that way it looks like they walked on water or something and they didn't get wet. I don't know why we do that, but that's something we do. So I did that real fast, and I'm shooting down the hall behind the sanctuary, and I turned the corner, and there's Thelma, and she looks at me, and she ducks into this classroom. Well, I had her trapped then, because there was only one way into that classroom. So I went and I stood in the doorway, and I said, Thelma, what are you doing? Every time I see you in the church, you act like you're sneaking around. She says, oh, Pastor Heller, I'm not supposed to be here. I said, what do you mean you're not supposed to be here? It turns out that when she was 16 years old, she was put out of the church. I think that's a great idea. fact, every church I've ever put, I said, hey, let's do the put out thing, man. You know, like at every business meeting, let's figure out who the weakest link in and put them out. I did, but no church ever took me up on that. I don't know why. I thought it was a great idea. But anyway, they put Thelma out, and they put her out for dancing. And so I said, well, Thelma, I'm the pastor. I got a little bit of authority. I think I can do something about that. So I asked somebody to go through the church records. I said, look back like 160 years ago when she was like 16 and see if you can find out what that's all about. And so I wasn't about to go through those church records. Oh my gosh, talking about boring. So I got somebody else to, very willing person to do that. And so they went through it, and sure enough, they found it. Way back when she was 16, two of the deacons had been walking down this, now this is downtown Richmond, you know, where the fan, you know, how the all the houses are right next to the street, right next to each other. And they're walking down the street, and they see through the picture window in the front of the house, Thelma is by herself in her living room, just dancing around, the 16-year-olds just dancing around. So they had to, they were Baptist deacons, so they had to do something about that. So what they did at the next business meeting, they voted to put Thelma out of the church for 2 weeks. Then the deacons were supposed to go and restore her. But guess what the deacons do? We got deacons at this church? Good, because they forget stuff they shouldn't forget. But they forgot to go get her and restore her. So here she is now, 160 years old. She didn't think she's supposed to be there. So at the next business meeting, I bring it up that we should restore Thelma with all the rights and privileges of church membership. And I kind of got carried away. And I said, and we should give Thelma permission to dance anytime she wants to dance. And this one old guy, he's near the front row. He goes, oh, I don't know if we ought to do that or not. So I went over and I said, she's 160 years old. How much is she going to dance? But the Bible 20 times talked about people dancing for joy. You know, heaven is a joyful place. It's a joyful place. In fact, C.S. Lewis says, joy is the serious business of heaven. You know, if you don't like laughing, if you don't like joy, you may not like heaven. In fact, you might want to make arrangements to, well, no, I'm not going to go there. But heaven is joyful. In fact, even in the creation story, we see that God is joyful. John Ortberg has rewritten Genesis chapter 1, and this is what it would sound like if God wasn't joyful. He said, in the beginning, it was 8 o'clock, so God had to go to work. He began by filling out a requisition to separate the light from the darkness. He considered making stars to beautify the night, but he thought it sounded like too much work. Besides, he thought, that's not my job. So he decided to knock off early that day. And he looked at all he'd done and he said, it will have to do. On the second day, God separated the waters from the dry land, and he made all the dry land flat and plain and functional. So the whole earth looked like Central Park. He thought about making mountains and valleys and glaciers and jungles and forests and waterfalls, but he just couldn't work up the effort to do it. So God looked at all he'd done that day, and he said, it will have to do. And then God made a pigeon to fly in the air, and a carp to swim in the water, and a cat to creep upon the dry land. And God thought about making millions of other species of all sizes and shapes and colors, but he couldn't drum up any enthusiasm for any other animals. In fact, he wasn't too crazy about the cat. Besides, it was almost time for the five, so God looked at all that he had done that day and he said, it will have to do. And at the end of the week, God was seriously burned out. And he breathed a big sigh of relief and said, thank me, it's Friday. So do you remember joy? Think back to when you were a child. Your heart was free. Your soul ran wild. Each day was different. Life was a thrill. And you knew tomorrow would be better still. But things have changed. You're much older now. You're unhappy. And you don't know how. But do you remember joy? Do you remember your kids? when you would do something, and they go, do it again, Daddy, do it again.
Do it again.
Do it again, Daddy, do it again. The story goes that the angels came to God one day and said, God, what are you going to do today? And God said, today, I'm going to make daisies. So God made daisies, and he put them here and here and here on the earth. And when the angels saw the daisies, they got so excited. They giggled, and they laughed, and they screamed, and they jumped, and they had, oh, it was great. There's daisies. And so the next day, they come to God and say, God, what are you going to do today? What are you going to do today? And God says, today, I'm going to make daisies. And when he made daisies other places on the earth, the angels got excited, and they jumped, and they screamed, and they giggled, and they celebrated the daisies. And the story goes that every day since then, the angels have come to God and said, what are you going to do today? And every day, somewhere on the earth, God makes daisies. And every day, the angels jump up and giggle and shout for joy. So, why are we so bored? Chesterton said it. He said, we have sinned and grown old, but God has not. Most of our sin, you know what's interesting is most of the time when we sin, we think it's going to make us happy. You know, like, you know, if I just had a little bit more love in my life, then I would be happy. And so we get involved in a little extramarital affair, we do this and that, you know, thinking it'll make us happy. But what it does, it decreases our capacity for joy. We think, if I just had a little more money, then I'd be happy. And so we cheat a little bit, and we fudge this a little bit, and we think that makes us happy. But what it does, it decreases our capacity for joy. And frankly, if you're dependent on yourself, then you've got every right to be anxious and stressed and frustrated if you're just dependent on yourself. You know, God's book, the Bible, is designed to show us how to have joy. Before he was arrested, Jesus said, I have taught you all of this so that my joy might be complete in you, totally full. That's what he said, that my joy might remain in you, and that your joy, and that my joy will be fully complete. Now think about that. You know, if you take the Gospels, a third of them have to do with the miracles of Jesus. A third of them have to do with his mission, where he goes, he's on his way to Jerusalem and he dies for us. And a third of them have to do with his teachings. And what he says here, he says, all of my teaching I gave you so that you could have joy. And then when you think about it, when he did the miracles, he was trying to solve the things that were stealing people's joy. That much of the Gospels is there so that we can have, you know, he really is the Lord of joy. In fact, Isaiah, what, 400 years before Jesus arrived, he's looking into the future, he's seeing Jesus, and you know what he calls Jesus? He calls him the good news. The good news. He really is the Lord of joy. So why is it important for you to have joy, for you to just, I mean, it's implicit that you have joy. And I'll tell you why. Because you're trying to grow this church. This afternoon, you're going to think an ice cream might work. And it might. But joy is attractive. I was at a church that was, I mean, we were stuck. We weren't growing at all. And yet the church down the street was. So I took the pastor out for lunch. And I said, well, let me tell you what the crunch of the lunch is. I want to know why your church is growing and mine isn't. And so he got out his napkin. And he drew a picture of, two churches and little stick churches. There it is right there. You know, most of the main things that have happened in this world started with napkins and restaurants like this. And so he draws these things, and then he puts a smiley face on one of them and a sad face on the other one. And he says, so which one of these churches would you rather go to? You see, it's important that you have joy because it's attractional. I remember my first church I pastored, I went there long, and here comes the committee. You know, every church has their committee that's going to set the pastor straight. And here they came. They had a legal pad. I remember they had a whole long list of stuff. But right at the top was, you tell too many jokes in the pulpit. And I don't remember how I responded. What I should have done is just laugh, you know. But I remember thinking, what kind of God do you have that doesn't laugh, that doesn't have joy? What kind of God is that? So it's imperative that you have joy. Especially if you're meeting in a funeral home. You kind of got to overcome that. But listen to Psalm 126. Our mouth was filled with laughter, and our tongue with shouts of joy. And then they said among the nations, the Lord has done great things. You see, when the world saw that God's people were laughing out loud and in full of joy, their immediate response was, the Lord has done good stuff for them, you know? You know, the Bible said, Jesus said, out of the heart of man, the mouth speaks. And if you got joy in your heart, it seems like it would turn up, at least turn up the corners of your mouth, right? So let me tell you about the big myth, the big lie about joy. Because every time I bring up joy, somebody says, well, you know, there's a difference between joy and happiness. And there's a little bit of truth in that. I mean, what do they say? Happiness is based on happenings, you know, and joy. Well, I have found that, well, that's a theology of the sad. Because they can say to themselves, oh, I have joy. I got the joy, deep, really deep down in my heart. It just never shows out here, but I got it because it's down here. That theology is basically their excuse for being sad. Hope that doesn't hit you too hard, but that's a myth. You know, Martin Luther, you know the guy that nailed the thesis on the door? He said, you have as much laughter as you have faith. Now that surprised me, because you know, all the paintings, they didn't have photos back then, all the paintings of Martin Luther, he was like this, you know? Well, when you're posing for a painting, you can't smile like this. In fact, even in early photography, everybody's frowning because the exposure took a while, and they learned real fast. I don't know if you've ever done a wedding and had to stop. I've done too many, and I've stood in front of the camera, and one more picture, you know. But Martin Luther, obviously, was a guy that laughed a lot. You have as much laughter as you do faith, he says. You see, laughter is oxygenated faith. Somebody said that. I don't know who, so I can't give anybody credit for that. Wasn't me. That's too long of a word for me. But joy, God's joy, is contagious. So determine to be a joy distributor. Because if you do that, you'll enjoy watching people catch the joy. It's pretty cool. All right, so let me give you some steps. See, I told you this was a long sermon, didn't I? We're about 25% of the way through, so hang in there. Just kidding. I'm going to keep this down to 90 minutes. I don't care what. So I love that nervous laughter. I'm hearing right now. Is he serious? 90 more minutes. How about that? But I want to give you some joy makers, okay? Some steps that will move you toward joy. Because my guess is, I don't know you, but my guess is some of you are, well, let's see, I want to be politically correct, joy impaired, joy challenged. So let me give you some ideas here. Number one, take responsibility for your own joy. Take responsibility. You know, Paul said in Philippians 4, rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. When the Bible ever repeats something, I mean, this is not just a command. It's a double command. Rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. I was doing some marriage counseling one time. And at one point, the husband gets up off the couch and he walks behind the couch and he puts his hands on his wife's shoulders and he says, Pastor, she really tries. I mean, she really tries. But she just doesn't have what it takes to make me happy. So being the the good, I did what any good pastoral counselor would do. I went over, picked him up, and threw him out the window. No, I didn't do that. Although I don't know why people don't come to me for marriage counseling anymore. But I wanted to shake the guy. I want to just tell him, joy, your happiness is up to you, man. It's between you and your God. In fact, there's not a woman in the world, there's not a spouse in the world that can make an unhappy person happy. She can be icing on the cake, but you got to be happy. That's your responsibility. You know, I was talking to a widow one time. She just lost her husband, and I'm sitting down as the pastor. I'm kind of going through the stages of grief, you know, anger and denial and all of that. And then when I finished, I got up to leave, and I got to the door, and I said, I really felt like the Lord said, you left something out. So I came back and I sat back down. There's one more thing. You're going to find yourself at times smiling or laughing. And you might feel guilty about that. But don't. That's part of the grieving process too. I said to her, I want to give you permission to have joy. So let me just do that for you right now. I give you permission. If you hadn't heard anything else, listen to this. I give you permission to pursue joy. In fact, in the name of Jesus Christ, I give you permission to pursue joy. Did you catch it? Did you get it? Does that free you? Good. Good. You know, even our founding fathers, you know, today on the mall, they're rededicating our country to God. A lot of people there, a lot of speakers there and stuff. And I'm going to be praying for the same thing. But even our founding fathers knew that it was our inalienable right, our God-given right, to pursue happiness. Even they knew that. My mom, when my dad died, I called her. It was probably within a week after he died, and I just called to check on her, and she said, well, Jim, I got a really big decision I got to make. I said, well, Mom, you're not supposed to make any major decisions right off the bat. You're supposed to wait a year or something like that. And she said, oh, but I got to make this one. I got to make it fast. I said, well, what's the decision? She said, I've got to decide whether I'm going to be a poor, pitiful widow or whether I'm going to be a joy to be around. Well, thank goodness she chose the latter, because it affected us kids and the grandkids. And I got to say, from then on, she did everything she could to be a joy to be around. Plus, that'll open up doors for you. All right, so number one, take responsibility for your own joy. Number two, there's only 20 of these. Number two, I'm getting the most laughs about how long this is going to be. All right, number two, when do you start? You start today. Psalm 118, this is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad. You know, if you're feeling weak or defeated or anxious, the joy of the Lord is your strength. So make room for it. Court it. Fall in love with it. Pursue it. Joy is not something to hide. It's a place where you can thrive. All right, number three, practice celebration. Practice celebration. You know, in the Bible, there's all these festivals that God sets up. And the reason for that, he wants us to take time to celebrate. I love that verse we read earlier. Go your way, eat the fat, drink the sweet, and don't be sorry, for the joy of the Lord is your strength. Take every excuse, every birthday, every anniversary, every time somebody does something, every excuse you have to celebrate. But now let me note, while I'm giving you these hints on how to move toward joy, that joy, God's joy, is really something supernatural. It's supernatural. You can't really achieve it. You just receive it. But I do think if we start making some of these steps toward joy, that God will honor that, and he'll give you joy. So receive it. Number four, hang out with joyful people. You know, Jesus went to a wedding. Have you ever been to a Jewish wedding? Talk about joyful, talk about dancing, talk about singing. Oh my gosh. Jesus knew to hang out with joyful people. Now, for some of you, this means that this afternoon, you're going to have to think of somebody that's joyful, and you just have to call them up and say, oh, the preacher today said I needed to hang out with joyful people, and so I need to hang out with you. Could we make an appointment, maybe just for an hour sometime? But it really helps to hang out with joyful people. And the fact is not everybody makes you smile. You know, that's just, in fact, some people, they're not happy unless they're sad, you know? But the Bible makes it pretty clear that we got to spend time with those people that aren't happy. It's called ministry. In fact, have you noticed what we call it? We call it the work of the ministry, because it's work to be around. But make sure you balance that, overbalance that with people that are joyful, that will bring joy into your life. Number five, be creative and interject joy into your low spots. All right, so what's your low spot? Maybe it's your job. If it is, listen to Ecclesiastes 5:18. It is good for a person to eat and to drink and to find joy in their toilsome labor, to find joy in your work. You know how Walt Disney translated that verse? Whistle while you work, right? Isn't that what he did? So think of ways to inject joy into your job. I know a guy, he said, oh man, everybody's sad at my work. We're working hard, blah, blah, blah. So what he did is he went to work early one day, and his office was on the second floor of the building. And so outside the main entrance, he went down and he super glued a $5 bill to the sidewalk. And then he stood up there in his office and he watched people coming in trying to scoop that thing up. And he got to laughing about it. And then the people that had already fallen for it, they gathered at the window too. And they for a half hour, they watched people coming in. Now, somebody's thinking, you shouldn't waste $5 like that. And I hope you don't work for the Treasury Department. I will not give you that guy's name. But if you can spend $5 to bring joy to your workplace, spend the money. Spend it. Just, what's the hard task you got to have? Just figure out a way. Like, I'm trying to diet, so I'm trying to figure out, how can I do this with some joy? How can I bring some fun into that? Maybe your low point is that you're sick. Well, Proverbs says that a cheerful heart is good medicine. And so bring some joy into that. I've got a friend, he had an operation, and after the operation, you know how they get you up right away and you have to walk, and so they have, in the hospital, they actually have railings he called it the hospital shuffle, you know, he's got his pole with the IV on it, he's doing this, and it's the day after his operation or something like that. Anyway, he just gets totally worn out, and he stops, and he's right in the middle of this doorway, and he looks into this room, and there's this lady in the bed there, and she's looking at him like this, and he's huffing and puffing. So he says, have you seen a guy in a yellow robe go by here? And she said, no. Good, I'm ahead. My friend Marty, he was in the house. He said everybody on that hallway was sad. So he got his wife to bring his clown costume, and he put on his clown wig, and he put on his clown nose, and then he got in his bed, and he pulls the cover-ups over his head. And that really makes nurses nervous when you do that. So the nurse comes in. She says, Mr. Asher, are you okay? Are you okay? I feel like a clown. You find some ways to interject. Also, number six, remember rule number six. Remember rule number six. Now, what is rule number six? All right, so there were these two prime ministers. They were, they'd gotten together, you know, for a visit, kind of like what they just did over in China. But anyway, the home prime minister is sitting there, and here comes somebody in running. Sorry to disturb you, sir. Sorry to disturb you, but something, this and blah, blah, blah. And she's all upset about it. He goes, remember rule number six. She goes, oh, yeah, rule number six, okay. And she leaves. And then another person comes in, a man comes in this time, going, Mr. Prime Minister, blah, blah, blah. He said, whoa, remember rule number six. And so that person calms down and leaves. And then, of course, a third person comes in, because in these kind of stories, there's always the third person comes in, and the same thing happens. And so after the third person leaves, the visiting prime minister says, "I got to ask you, what is rule number six?" He said, "Oh, rule number six is just don't take yourself so seriously. That's rule number." He said, "Well, I'm amazed at how well that works." He says, "Oh, yeah, just remember rule number six." "Well, what are the other rules?" The prime minister said, "Oh, there are no other rules, just rule number six, you know." But don't take yourself so seriously. Just don't do it. In fact, you know, humility in my vocabulary is defined like this. Humility is the ability to laugh at yourself. I really can't think of a better definition of humility than that. It's the ability to laugh. You know, we take ourselves too seriously. We're perpetually, our culture today, it's like you're supposed to have a chip on your shoulder and you're just waiting for somebody to knock it off. You know, that seems to be it. We're into being offended. That's just, you're not with it unless you're offended about something, you know? So just learn to laugh at yourself. You know, Chesterton said, the reason angels can fly is because they take themselves so lightly. Number seven, practice comic relief. Practice comic relief. You know, under every situation, no matter how dire it is, there is a reservoir of humor. Sometimes you got to drill kind of deep, but it's there. My dad, he was in World War II. He was at the Battle of the Bulge, and he was in D-Day. But he used to tell me about the jokes they would tell each other. My son works with vets, and he says their humor is, it's gallows humor a lot, but they got it. You know, they've got to find that reservoir of humor. So practice comic relief. And then number eight of the number 20, number eight is keep your eyes on the outcome. Keep your eyes on the end. I mean, we know, we've read the book, that in the end we win. I mean, listen to Revelation 21. He will wipe away every tear from your eye. There will be no more death, no more sorrow, no more crying, no more pain. All these things are gone forever. And with that being the end, if you can keep your eyes on that, then we can go through whatever it is that we go through with some degree of joy. I did a wedding one time. It was, it was in a church, and right in the middle of the wedding, the bride fainted. So, you know, they bring her some water, they get a folding chair put up there, they get her up, they kind of get her conscious, and the bridegroom's going, "Come on, let's go. I want to marry this girl. Come on, let's go." So I start again, and the maid of honor fainted. So they got her on the front pew up there. They kind of get her going, and the bride, the groom is going, "Come on, man, I want to marry this girl. Come on. So I'm kind of going, "Okay." And so we start again, and then the bride faints again, falls off the chair. So they get her up, and the groom is going, "Come on, man, come on." I'm thinking, you know, I think she's got to be conscious for this thing to be legal. Anyway, finally, I pronounce them husband and wife. We get through it. And when I do that, he doesn't kiss the bride. Instead, he just picks her up out of that chair, and he carries her out. And at the back door there, he turns around, and he looks at me, and he smiles like, "I got my bride." You know, I picture it like this. I picture every day Jesus comes to the Father, says, "Is today the day I get to go get my bride? Is the day the day?" And the Father said, "No, not today, but soon." But you know, one day, very soon, he's going to come to the Father, and the number will be ready. And the Father says, "Go get your bride." And he's going to jump on that white horse, and he's going to come through that sky, and he's going to get us, and we really are going to live happily ever after. And you know, with that kind of ending, there's nothing that the world can't throw at us that we can't live through with some degree of joy. So rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice. Well, that's only 8 points. Let's sing something. What do you say? I'll let you off the hook at this point.
Let's stand and joyfully sing, "How Great Thou Art."